Yeah, go ahead.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Start Writing. We are continuing A Beginner's Guide to Writing a Novel. And it's been a few months. My apologies for that.
Yeah.
Today.
Like when you said welcome to Start Writing, I'm like, wow, we have not recorded one of these in a while.
Yeah. Yep. That's my fault. I guess if I can get a little personal, my wife and I had a son. And that's just been really busy, a lot of late nights, losing a lot of sleep. It's worth it. It's been such a cool thing. But yeah, so that's been the delay. Okay, so we've talked about building worlds and characters, and now we're diving into plot. So this is the third strand in our story braid. And a little while ago, we got an email from a reader, Sam, and he asked all the questions that I wanted to answer in this episode.
Oh,
it's great. So, Sam, I'm gonna personally email you a link to this episode once we publish it. But so to you listeners, he asked a few questions that I want to mention, and then that's kind of what we're gonna cover in this episode. So. He asks, should you simply write the first scene first and the second scene second? Then he says, I've heard about starting from the climax and working backward, so maybe I should try that. Or start with the three or four most critical events and kind of use that as your structure. And then he concludes by saying, well, what works for you guys and what do you think is good for a beginner? And so, yeah, that's what we're going to cover today, Sam, and everyone else. So I want to answer the first one, maybe the first question that I'm least qualified to answer. And that's, he said, should you start at the end and work backward from the climax? I have never tried that. I don't know if it works. I recently finished my Starchild trilogy and now I'm writing a prequel to that. So I know where that story ends, but I don't know what happens right before. So what I'm doing currently is I wrote the last chapter. And in this episode, I'm going to talk about what I call a plot clock. And we start up at midnight and go around like 3 o'clock, 6, 9, and then back to midnight. Those are like the five main points of the clock and of the plot structure. And my current plan for Starchild Zero, that's what this novella is called, is to work backward. And I'm just going to write five chapters that follow the protagonist. And I've already written chapter 5, and I'm just going to step backward around that clock, and we'll see if it works. So Sam, hopefully in a few months I can answer that question with more clarity. But in this case, I think it's going to work because I'm trying to tie this prequel into its sequel. And I know what happens next, and I don't know what happens before, so writing backward to me seems right. Like it would facilitate that.
Yes.
Joe, any thoughts on that? Have you ever tried to write a story backward?
Well, I mean, I plot things out. I've written two books where I sit down and write, and those I went sequential, right? I just started chapter one and just went. And I think I've mentioned in the past, that was an awful writing process. I did not like it. But now I am a plotter. And so I guess sitting down and writing the chapters, I do kind of go chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, but writing the outline doesn't necessarily go that way. I definitely start with the climax when I'm sitting down to plot. I'll be like, okay, this is the big moment I want to have happen. How do I get there?
Yeah.
It's definitely something. But, you know, to say that I just start there isn't entirely true because during the research process, I imagine scenes that I know I want to write into this story. And so I will start at the climax, but even, you know, as I just sit down and start filling out the, whatchamacallit, the plot outline, you know, I plug in the scenes that already exist in my head. I'll be like, okay, this goes in the beginning, this goes in the middle, this one goes after that one. You know, so all those pieces are kind of plugged in before anything really happens. But like I said, at that point, if I haven't flushed out the climax, that's when I sit down and think about it. Now, I haven't always done this in my books, but it was actually in this last book, working with Jay, where we have redone the climax like twice because I've just been so unhappy with how the book has been going. And I think part of that dissatisfaction comes from me growing as a writer. You know, a younger, earlier writer of me would have just committed to, you know, the first climax that I decided on and just gone with it. Whereas now, I have a clear view of things, be like, no, it needs to be more. It needs to be bigger. And because I think I've grown as a writer and have a better understanding of story and its impact, I can look at what I imagine and say, this doesn't work. And then I sit down with Jay and we kind of work through things to try and figure it out. So, and then having done that process with Jay, it's like, okay, I've got to build backwards from here to figure out how we get there. Not only that, but as we've done a few episodes, we talked about emotional genre. And I've encountered a few series of shows that have really just captivated me. And I realized part of what just really holds my attention is just the deep, complex mysteries. Mm. And I'm not writing a mystery. I'm writing a thriller. But I began to see that I think this is a big part of holding a reader's attention through slower parts of the story, and through character backstory and building and exposition. And it seems like you can hold a reader a lot better if you have some kind of big mystery that's just got their attention that they want to solve. Hmm. And it now, seems...
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah, but it seems a lot easier to do that by starting with what it is and then building in the pieces of the puzzle along the way because you already know where it's going, as opposed to sitting down and trying to be like, okay, these are the pieces of the puzzle. I'll put them together when I have them all. You know, so it seems like just writing mystery, you know, particularly as I've seen some of these incredibly complex mystery, what is it, Attack on Titan was one that really captivated me.
Just really?
How complex and winding the mystery was. And seeing that, I was like, they had to start at the end to make it that complex and winding because there's just so many pieces. You had to start at the end knowing where you're going and then just walked through the steps away from it.
Well, and I wanted to add to that. So you kind of clarified a point for me that when I plotted Star Child Zero, I was like, okay, I have five chapters. And I'm not even sure what order I wrote those down in. Like, you could just throw them down in any order, really, and then kind of figure out, yeah, they go there. So I'm not sure how I outlined this. I can't say what order, but now as I'm writing it in detail, I'm going backward. And those are two significantly different steps. And that's kind of what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
I'm glad you distinguished. And then we're going to get a little to the mystery, which... I think maybe you'll have more to say on that than me, but I think that's a really good insight. Okay, so just this is mostly a review. If you've listened to our other episodes, you've heard us talk about gardeners versus architects. As I was thinking more about this, it made me realize that to be a gardener, you have this sense of my story is not entirely under my control. So if it's an orange tree, it's going to go... If you're a good author, it's going to grow great oranges, but you can't change it to apples. You can't. That's not up to you. That's the tree. And I think in some sense, that's true for all authors. Like even if you're a strong architect plotter, there's a certain aspect of the story that's just out of your control, and you kind of have to let it grow and cultivate itself. And of course, Stephen King on writing, he's like the champion of this side of the spectrum. And the other side of the spectrum is you can make your story literally whatever you want. You're the one with the pen. See, you're making it happen.
That's where I stand on story is you make it whatever you want. However, I think as you write, you have ideas, and just you as a person and as an author decide which of those are good and you're going to cultivate, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of wanted to offer this as advice to our listeners. So you ought to think about this spectrum and figure out where you land. And then embrace that, right? If you're Stephen King and you can just sit down and blast through a novel and you discover it as you go and it's awesome, then great, embrace that. If you need to be a plotter to make it happen, then do that. And I think you can get some really cool stories by being an architect. But having said that, I think if you're on one end of the spectrum or the other, look at the other end and see if there's something that you can learn from that. Maybe you're a gardener who needs some more structure. Maybe you can have a stronger story if you study that a little. And maybe you're an architect who has your grip so tight that you're not discovering these cool new endings because it's like, well, no, it has to be how I planned it, and I'm not going to change it into this more organic thing that kind of exposed itself as I went. Anyway, I thought I'd throw that out as something to consider. Okay, and then this is, I thought this is super cool. So up here on the screen I have George Martin was 13 chapters into writing Game of Thrones. So that's like halfway through the book. I can't remember exactly how many chapters there are, but so then he writes this 3-page letter to his I don't know if it's to his agent or to a publisher, and he says, "Here's Game of Thrones. I'm writing it. I want to sell it to you, and I want to sell you its 2 sequels." And he says the sequels are Winds of Winter. It's so cool. You can read it all in here. And the sequel is Dance with Dragons and Winds of Winter. So three novels, and here's what's going to happen in them. And he explains it all. And then he finishes a Game of Thrones, and before he gets to his sequel, Dance with Dragons, he writes 3 other books, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then finally, number 5 is A Dance with Dragons. So this, I think it's cool that it's an example of a gardener, and a very successful one, who he was open enough to let his story grow. And mm-hmm. I mean, we have this awesome Song of Ice and Fire series because he didn't stick with his plot outline. And he said, "Oh, sorry."
Oh, it was just funny. I was like, "Yeah, he definitely didn't stick."
Oh,
with
yeah,
it.
It's so funny.
Volumes in between.
And he's promised us 2 more novels: A Winds of Winter and A Dream of Spring, and then that'll wrap it up. But if you look at the pattern, if you know George Martin, it's like, no, I don't think there's any way that's going to happen. It's going to expand again. But I could be wrong, and I'm like dreadfully worried that he's going to pass away before he can finish this awesome epic, because it takes him a long time.
It does. Well, not like that, but he's always like sidetracked with other projects, you know? I mean, we've been waiting for the next book for years. In between then, he released A History of Westeros.
Yeah,
you know, he's doing other things. He doesn't just sit down and write these books. So, you know, I think he could finish these, but it would require him to focus on them, and he doesn't do that.
I'm terrified that we're never going to get the finale, which, by the way, I am certain it will be different than what the show is, because again, he lets it grow, and I just think it will change by the time he gets there.
Well, not only that, but I mean, like, as soon I really enjoyed the series, but I watched one episode where they had gone past the books and they were just kind of doing their own thing, and I immediately was like, this is not as good, I'm out. And I stopped watching right there. And I've heard that it only went downhill from there.
That's so funny. I actually haven't seen the finales either. I know what happens, but I never watched them. That's crazy.
See, I don't even know what happens for sure. Like, I've heard bits and pieces here, but I don't know all of it. But like I said, I think it was, they had 2 or 3 seasons after the books. And like I said, I watched that first episode. I was like, no. Like, they had what was this big surprise moment in the episode. I was like, that's not a surprise. You cheated. You cheated. Yeah. You lied to us about the way the direction the story was going. And then you flipped it the last minute and be like, that's not good storytelling. That's not a good surprise. You know, you may feel like that's how stuff goes, but he says, when you get hit with a George R. R. Martin surprise moment, you're like, yep, should have seen it coming. All the pieces were there. And, you know.
It's so true.
They did not do that at all. You know, they did not do that at all. So, yeah. So that was the moment I was like, nope, not as good. And there's a meme that I saw that I really liked. And it's Sansa Stark talking to Tyrion. and the meme fills out the dialogue instead of being what it actually was. And so the dialogue is, Sansa says to Tyrion, she's like, "I thought you were the smartest man in the Three Kingdoms." And Tyrion's reply was, "He is. I was, until they ran out of original source material." And I was like, yeah, that's how that goes.
That is so funny.
he's not clever and brilliant anymore the way he used to, because they didn't have that great writing to lean on anymore.
He can only be as smart as his author. Yeah. One thing I think is important that we learn from this example is that when you're outlining and you're an architect figuring out the structure of your story, you're in an airplane and you're taking aerial photography, and from way up there you're saying, well, this is what it looks like. This is the path that I can see down there, and I'm going to write it out. And at least in my personal experience, once you start writing, you're no longer in the air. You're on the ground. And you're getting dust in your lungs, and there's bugs on the leaves next to you, and there's all this detail.
Trees in your way,
The trees in your way. There's all this detail that you just can't see from your outline. And to me, that's an important thing to keep in mind, that I just feel like, as much as I love structuring and architect, like, I'm a huge fan of it, but I just feel like you have to stay open to new discoveries once you get down there and you're writing the details of your novel, because there's just stuff you can't see from the aerial view. Okay, so I wanted to tell you a personal story about like how I came to this plot structure I'm about to show you. I was in a Master's of English, and I was writing X-Dot for a young adult literature class that I was in. That's my first novel that I finished. And I was simultaneously in another class, and I thought, you know what? I don't know if I have the bandwidth to go deep into this. I'm not going to outline this story. I was trying to write kind of a Catcher in the Rye thing, where it's like this, no magic in it, which is usually what I do. I do like sci-fi fantasy. This one was just contemporary realism, and it was like about head games, you know, mental, like depression and romance and whatnot. And this is like the only story really that I've just dived into without plotting or planning ahead. And I think I wrote some good, like, emotional stuff. Like I was making this character that was cool. So I go to class, I turn it in. My teacher was old Thayer, right? He's 80 years old. This was his last semester teaching. He has this VHS camera. I'm just trying to paint the picture. He puts like these massive VHS tapes into this camera. And then on the first day he says, "Now stand in front of my camera. I'm going to record you. I'm going to ask you questions. And then I'm going to go review it at home." And like, he's like this intense guy. But so it comes my day. I turn in my draft of what I've written. We've all read it. And old Thayer gets up. He turns around, grabs a black marker, and he just draws this flat black line across the whiteboard. And he just kind of sat there for a second, and it was silent. And I was like, "Crap, what's coming?" And he said, "This is your plot." And I was like, whoa.
This is your plot.
But what he was teaching me was, I didn't have the rising action and the climax and the denouement. Like, I was only exploring character, and I just didn't have plot in it. And I realized I didn't know how to fix it. And so I dove into plot, and I've studied it a lot, and I feel like I found something that works really well for me. And that's what I'm going to show you today. But there's a lot of ways to do plot out there. So if what I teach doesn't connect with you, go out there and find it. Like, it's out there, and the thing that's going to fix your flat black line is out there. You just need to find it. And I mean, hopefully what I share you today is going to fix it for you. But if not, I promise what you need is out there.
So I guess I don't know where you're going next, but there are a few writers who kind of talk about, particularly if you're early on, is what you do is you find a story in the genre you're writing in that you like and is similar to what you're writing. And essentially you can kind of map your plot onto the bones of that story. And so then you know, be like, "I am writing, this one has been done a lot, but still works." Be like, "I am writing a romance where the protagonists start off hating each other, and then they grow to admire and like each other." So you take the bones of Pride and Prejudice, and then you say, okay, what are the major plot points of Pride and Prejudice that start their relationship and then reshape it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you take those exact moments and you break them down into their, I guess, principles, the principal components of them, and then you map your own plot onto them, right? Mm. So we start off with, you know, Elizabeth Bennet meeting Mr. Darcy. And it actually starts off not with them hating, but just more mystery. He is not really that interested or anything, but they know he's very good looking and he's very wealthy. So that sparks her interest. And so you have that point, be like, it's the female protagonist, or you don't even have to go that far. You can go one protagonist starts out curious, not romantically interested, but just curious about this person. They meet the standards of attraction that they would normally have, but without a real direct encounter between the two, they don't have a genuine interest in this person, more of almost a celebrity curiosity kind of thing going on, right? So that's your first point taken from what exactly happens, you know, at the dance where Mr. Darcy is there and people are talking about him, to the principal, and then you can take that principal and put it into your plot. And that is what I mean by you map out the bones and then put your story into those bones.
Man, that's awesome. And I think we're trying really hard to make it simple for a beginner. And that's a genius strategy.
So, I mean, it's still a strategy. If I'm struggling with a plot point, I will sometimes be like, can I find a story where I can do some bone mapping, because I'm having trouble with this midpoint, you know. Particularly as you get into act 2 and 3, that big middle can sometimes be hard to fill. And so the really good place to look at the bones of others and start to kind of build on them.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a graphic up here that I think there might be a temptation to be a gardener so you don't have to waste time outlining. And I just mapped that, like, with the gardener, you have X amount of time writing and X amount of time editing. And I think when you garden, it seems like it takes a long time to edit. There's a lot of cleanup to do to solidify it, but when you outline, it shortens your writing time because you don't have to do as much brainstorming and figuring out. And I believe that it shortens your editing time as well. So to me, it's a trade-off, and I think it's possible to come out better off in the end for having spent that time to outline because the next steps are faster.
My own view on this is early in my writing career, I thought a lot about how long it took to finish a book, because in my head I had this idea. I would write this first book, it would be a huge success, and become a full-time writer. And that didn't happen. And then I learned about the tactic of, you know, you create your reader magnet and it helps bring in readers to your series and you can build a fan base with it. And I was like, okay, that's the piece I'm missing. So again, I was like, I want to get this done, you know, as quick as I can so I can then become the full-time great writer I want to be. And it didn't happen. I was like, okay, what am I missing? I'm like, well, I'm not making enough money through the whole series. So I need more books in the series so that, you know, I can sell them at that lower price point. And, you know, somebody who buys the book can then read all of the books, you know, and a sale of the book becomes worth a lot more. That's what I'm missing. And that didn't happen. And so by the time I was writing the fourth book in the series, the idea that this would be the book that would change everything didn't exist anymore. That wasn't an idea that drove me. And so I stopped thinking about how long is it going to take me to finish this book. And now it's like, you know, I'm just going to write this book until I am happy with it. And then it's done. Mm. And I don't think about how long it takes anymore, or how long it's going to take, or trying to trim edges off of the clock. You know, the point, you know, there's no longer that disillusion in my mind that this will be the book that launches my career. It might be, but that's no longer my thought process in sitting down to write. Be like, now I sit down and be like, you know, this character is too flat. I need to spend the next 2 days of writing time writing a piece of character Bible for them, so I have a deep understanding of the character. And that will make their choices a little more consistent. That will bring them more life on the page. I can even write an emotional arc for them. It may not make the final cut of the story, but there will be no doubt in my mind that I did everything to make that character the best they could be for the story they're now in. And so, like I said, getting past this idea that this is the book that launches my career, I think was a big step in improving the quality of my writing, because suddenly I wasn't in a rush to finish the book thinking this was going to change everything for me. It's like I'm just sitting down to write every day, and when the book is done, it's done.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. And to be honest, that sounds a bit like a gardener, where it's like the story is a little bit out of your hands and you just got to be patient and let what happens happen.
See, I guess I do not think of myself as a gardener at all. You know, I read through the chapter because I'm in the editing process and I'm like, here is the problem. I had an outline. I converted it to a first draft. Now, I do strongly believe in cranking out that first draft as fast as possible. Like, and the reason for that is I believe that the first draft of anything is trash. And
just get it over with.
But what happens, just get it over with. And what happens is when you have a first draft, you've actually thought through every detail of the story, right? There's no longer an imagination of how a scene works. And then when you plug that scene into a chapter, it then has to negotiate with what happened in the chapter before and what happens in the chapters after. And that changes it. All of that has already happened in that first draft. So you can see what the story actually is at that point.
Yeah.
And then you can go back to the outline and change the outline to fit the story what it is. And then you can adjust the outline to alter the story to what you want it to be.
Yeah. Dang, that's
right?
Cool.
Because the first draft comes out ugly and messy, even though you may have written exactly what you outlined. For the first time, those pieces have to agree. You know, they don't. The scenes, the ideas, they no longer sit in that abstract place in your mind, right? For me, at least. You know, in the outlining, I think of this scene and the plot points that are in it, but it's abstract. It sits on its own. It doesn't have to connect to the chapter before. It doesn't have to connect to the chapter after. It doesn't care about what happened in chapter one. None of that matters because it's its own thing. And translating that into a novel, those pieces don't fit together. But as I write it, I adjust them so they do fit together. You know, so it is a story that can be read from A to Z, but it's no longer what I imagined. But having written that out, I can then go back and be like, okay, I still want it to be what I imagined, but these are the pieces I didn't think of that need to go in the beginning and in the middle to make the end what I wanted it to be, because those don't exist yet. In the abstract building, they were not put in there.
Well, Matt, you're reemphasizing that when you're at that high level aerial view, you just don't know. And so that first draft allows you to drop down to the ground and see it finally from that perspective.
Yeah. It's like a desert from the area, from the sky, looks flat. But when you're actually in it, it's not. Yeah. There's all kinds of hills and valleys in that sand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with the sprinting technique, you know, where you sit down and you just write. You don't stop to think. You don't edit. You don't rephrase. You nothing. You just write. And under that technique, I can do about half an hour, and then I need, you know, a good 10, 15 minutes break. Just for my mind needs a break, but my hands, like the muscles in my hands.
That's intense.
but I can get about 2,000 words in half an hour.
That's amazing. At that technique. That's amazing. You
know, like I said, it is ugly as heck. I mean, it is. you're looking at 10 minutes of editing just to clean it up enough so you can decently read it. You know, it is ugly. But the goal is not to produce a readable manuscript by somebody else. The goal is to force my mind to think through the whole story.
Yeah.
You know, to move through all of that. And then, you know, I can go back to the outline. And like I said, a lot of those chapters will be thrown out. When I, you know, I go back to the outline and then back to the manuscript.
Hmm.
But it's okay because, you know, I was cranking out a chapter in 15 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
It's 15 minutes is nothing compared to what's going to go into this novel. So it's not a big idea to throw out a chapter. It's not a big deal to throw out five, you know. I'll be like, I didn't take that long anyway. I could do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I am a big believer in you crank out the first draft just so your mind is forced to think through the whole novel for the first time, right? You have to walk the whole trail on the ground for the first time, and it changes things. Right, so that's yeah, all my thoughts.
That's great advice.
On the speed of writing.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. No, thank you. And I can say here to that. I think that's very true. I think too many young writers get stuck and they just don't write it. And it's like, just finish that arc. Just finish it. You're going to be so shocked at what you figure out by finishing your arc. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I do have a friend who, she's never finished a novel because she keeps saying she writes herself into quarter. And then I always tell her, like, throughout the chapter, she's like, I've been working on this chapter for months. Be like, no. You're like, you just need to sit down and crank this thing out. You're like, yeah. You write yourself in a corner,
yep.
Just keep writing and see what happens.
Just
and
if it start ugly and writing. Doesn't fit,
we fix that in post, you know? But until you have the whole thing in front of you, you don't know if you've actually written yourself into a corner, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you feel stuck, throw the chapter out. if you can, then you just crank it. But I think part of it is writing at that really fast speed. You know, you don't even have time to think about where I'm stuck. Be like, yeah, just go.
Okay, so let's see. So as I was studying plot and trying to figure out how I can fix the flat line on the whiteboard, I found, you know, all the typical stuff. There's the hero's journey. It's this cycle where you go into the underworld and you lose your mentor and all that. There's a three-act play, or, you know, Shakespeare had four and five acts sometime, but, you know, it's in these modules of acts. There's try-fail cycles where your hero attempts something and fails two or three times and then succeeds. And that's like the basic unit of your story. And that could be your whole story, or maybe there's different sets of these try-fail cycles. And then another one is a travelogue where your character's literally traversing a map and progressing that way. But the takeaway from each of these is that there's progression. That's the key word, progression. Things have to change. And that's the problem with my story that I was writing. It was just, this is the character, I'm revealing the character, but things weren't changing for the character. There was no progression. And I just showed you four options. There's a lot more, but the bottom line is there has to be progress. There has to be change. And that means I failed. And because I failed, I lost this. Or because I succeeded, I found out that. And maybe I don't want this. Or, you know, it has to change. It has to develop. And all of these are ways that you can have that progress and that change over time. So right here, I'm going to give you the simplest advice. That was something Sam asked for. The simplest advice I can give you on how to do a plot. And it's ABC. A is home. You're at home, right? Your life is a certain way at home. B is there's a monster. There's an obstacle standing in your way of where you're trying to get to. And then C is the treasure or your objective, whatever's on the far side of what you're trying to get to. And so this ABC is home, monster, treasure. You can also think of it as stakes. Like the stakes are what you stand to lose. So you have this home and this nice, comfortable life in your treehouse. And if you go out, you could get eaten by the monster or torn apart or whatever. And you lose your home. That's what's at stake. You could lose your home. But in order to get the treasure on the far side, you have to stake that. You have to risk it. And if you're struggling, if you're a writer who's struggling with your plot, you probably don't have good stakes. There's probably not something that the hero's going to lose if they venture out and do something daring. And now, I'm a sci-fi fantasy guy, so this sounds like a fantasy story. In fact, this is very similar to Song of Locke. That's no coincidence. But these don't have to be fantasy. So for stakes, what you stand to lose, maybe you have a safe job or job security. Maybe it's your marriage. Maybe it's your family. Maybe it's social acceptance where the thing you want requires you to take a dare and to go against what is socially acceptable. Maybe it's simply your social acceptance that you stand to lose. But there has to be something that is on the table that the hero could lose if they go on this quest. And then again, monster, this could be a business competitor. It could be evil security agent. It could be the quarterback's girlfriend. Like, it doesn't have to be a physical monster. It has to be some sort of antagonistic force that's standing between what where you are and where you want to be. And that needs to be a significant obstacle, or you're going to have a boring, flat story. And then the last thing, the treasure. Maybe you're trying to be a successful businessman. Maybe you're trying to defeat an evil spy. Maybe you're trying to find true love. There's a lot of ways. This doesn't have to be some like Lord of the Rings gem in a cave. It doesn't have to be that. There are a lot of things that could be your goal or your objective at the end of what you're reaching for. So let's see. I think I actually might wrap up that episode right there. That's the simplest plot structure that I can give you. In the next episode, we're going to do the plot clock that I mentioned. And then in a third plot episode, we're going to do subplots. But for now, we'll wrap it up right there. If you have questions, please email us. Our email is in the show notes. What else do we got? I guess that's it.
Yeah.
Oh. So thank you.
No, I was going to say, yeah, that's it.
So thank you for listening, and it's time to start writing.